This hour of the Jason Rancho is brought to you by Farrah.com. There's a lot of news happening all around the world and right here at home. So let's find out what's trending.
What's trending? The homelessness crisis.
Yet another couple attacks in Seattle that we have to go through. And it's one of those stories like I'm waiting for the day that producer Tom doesn't put on my desk in our Google documents or our little shared folder of all the shows we go to that does not include an attack on some innocent person by someone who's either homeless or suspected to be homeless. I don't know when we'll get to that point. Something tells me that once the primary is over and then the general election comes, maybe we'll get some new people in the Seattle City Council. But until then, I don't think I'm going to get one of those days. Every single day, I'm going to see one of these stories. First, prosecutors said Thomas Wayne Kennedy threatened a man in a wheelchair, a 54-year-old repeat offender. He threatened a guy in a wheelchair with a knife. It happened in downtown Seattle. Police said the victim was waiting to cross the street when Thomas Wayne Kennedy allegedly yelled, quote, "Jesus Christ, get the F out of the way," before he struck the back of the victim's leg with a stroller. This according to Cairo 7. They quote police saying the victim then pushed Kennedy away. Kennedy responded and yelled, "How dare you hit me?" before he pulled out a Milwaukee brand 6-inch fixed blade knife and said, "I'll effing get you." A nearby officer said he saw the witness pull the knife out, or witness Kennedy pull the knife out, and pointed at the victim in a threatening manner. So that guy was arrested. He's now in jail. A second one, just as disturbing, if not more disturbing. A dude attacks a group of men and women leaving an art celebration at Chief Seattle Club in Pioneer Square. This happened late last week. The guy who allegedly did it, his name is Michael Caballero. He's 29 years old. And oh, hey, look at that. He's homeless. One of the victims' name is Tia. She tells Como TV that this was a completely unprovoked attack.
You think there's safety in numbers, but no, he was after numbers. It was insane. Had he had a weapon, this would have been so much worse.
Police said Caballero was on top of a woman assaulting her, and when Good Samaritans tried to intervene, you know what happened to them. They also get attacked. In fact, he punched a man in the chest, and then he ended up hurting Tia, who says she was just trying to break up the fight. But unfortunately, she ends up getting attacked.
And he picked her up, like off the ground, and threw her into the building, and her head went back, and she slid down the building, and I yelled, "Stay down." I ran up, and I said, "Knock it off." And then he came at me, and he shoved me back, and I thought, uh-oh. This guy's either having a mental issue, a crisis, or on drugs, or something.
Yeah, maybe both. Is there like an all-of-the-above option that we can click on this? Sandy Smith is another victim. She spoke with Q13. And said that she was attacked by this guy as well.
She was screaming and yelling. Then he kind of got free of them, lifted me up in the air, and threw me against the building and onto the street. It feels to me like it has gotten worse. Can we please stop the repeat offenders?
I don't know how many times we have to hear that same message before people here in Seattle decide to actually do something. I don't hear Mayor Jenny Durkan or anyone on this council putting pressure on the Seattle City Attorney Pete Holmes or the King County Prosecuting Attorney Dan Satterberg to do their jobs. I'm not hearing that at all. What I hear is a whole bunch of excuses. Oh, well, you know what? There's some problems with the system that we need to address. Okay, then address them. And if you're not going to address them, put these people in jail and keep them there. We had someone who maybe is in fact going through some sort of mental illness issue. In fact, that's what he claims. Francisco Calderon, we have a dude who goes to jail after sucker punching people on Capitol Hill. He sucker punches this one guy. The judge throws him in jail. What happens after that? Seattle City Attorney Pete Holmes gets mad that we threw this guy in jail. He doesn't think it's going to work. He wanted that guy out of jail. The judge said, "No, I'm going to throw this guy in jail because that's where he belongs." The guy gets out of jail on a Thursday, recommits again another crime on a Saturday, that time throwing coffee in the face of a kid in a stroller. Pete Holmes is more interested in protecting the bad guys, keeping them out of jail. It would be something if he were fighting to keep them out of jail so that they can actually go to treatment. He's not mandating the treatment. His office isn't making sure people get treatment. His office doesn't make sure that there's even room for the person to go into treatment. He just says, "Oh, they need treatment. We're going to keep them out of jail." You're doing absolutely nothing. And at the end of the day, what ends up happening is more and more Seattleites are getting physically assaulted. This is supposed to be, I'm told, a world-class city. We're a world-class city. We got a thriving economy. We have some great people who are best of the best coming to work at Amazon, coming to work in this region. Oh, we're pouring millions and millions and millions of dollars into a new waterfront for tourists and the city to exploit and have fun with. This is a world-class city. And yet, we're dealing with problems that other quote-unquote world-class cities are not dealing with. Do you think this is happening all across the country, or is there one common denominator? Mayors and councils that live in an echo chamber of one type of political ideology. You look at what's happening in San Francisco, Los Angeles, New York. What are we seeing there? We're seeing similar stories. Out of control homelessness, out of control drug use, lawlessness, people not going to jail when they ought to be, and we're all suffering victims as a result. These women who get attacked, they are the victims.
Here we are again with another offense. Someone else is hurt. More people are hurt. Now what? We need a better way to deal with this.
I'm not hearing a single solution coming from the people who claim we're not compassionate when we want to put people like this in jail. Jail is not where I want to immediately put someone who's maybe dealing with a mental illness. No, I'd rather put them in a hospital bed. You know, I was told by Jay Inslee, I wasn't personally told, course. He doesn't talk to us, but I felt him talk to me directly at the CNN debate last week, and he was talking about how Washington State takes mental health really, really seriously. No, we don't. No, we don't. People laughed at him for saying that. People who actually live in Washington State, remembering that Washington State Hospital lost its certification, largest psychiatric institute in the state, lost its certification, lost about $56 million in federal funds. Under Jay Inslee, we've got people who are living with mental health issues out on the streets, committing acts of violence against innocent civilians, and nothing's being done. I get told that there are lots of holes in the system. They're just not fixing them. So until you fix them, either put these people in jail or give me something else. Give me a third option of what we can do to make sure this doesn't keep happening. Oh, I've got an option, making sure you guys vote tomorrow. Making sure those of you who've got friends in Seattle are voting. The primary is tomorrow. You've got your ballot. And I'm looking at some of the numbers coming in because we know about how many people sent in their ballots. It's embarrassing. I'm embarrassed. I know it's a primary year. I know it's not a presidential year. But we're talking about 14, 15, 16, 17% in some districts. That's embarrassing. Those numbers should be close to 100 because we understand what's actually at stake here. Saul Spady says this in the mornings all the time. The soul of Seattle is on the line. And it really is. And it's not a Seattle issue. Not only. We're going to be talking about this later on in the show. The city of Olympia is dealing with homelessness. They're trying to take control of a situation that's gotten out of hand because they decided to go down the pathway of what Seattle was doing. If you live in Mukilteo, let me be clear about something. The bad policies here, oh, they're spreading to Mukilteo. They're spreading to Marysville. They're spreading to Spanaway and Snoqualmie. It doesn't stay in Seattle, and we've seen time and time and time again how bad policies spread and how the activists who have wins in Seattle inspire activists outside of Seattle. When Shama Sawant wins, oh, what do you think that does? It inspires other socialists. And then all of a sudden, you've got the crazies running for office in Bellevue and Puyallup. You've got the crazy stepping up and getting together, activating in Tacoma. So for those of you who have not yet voted, if you live in Seattle, you owe it to yourself and to your community to vote. And if you've got a friend in Seattle who you know hasn't yet voted, make that phone call, send that text message, send that email, reminding them what's on the line. There are a lot of really, really good candidates out there all across Seattle. They're not all conservative. In fact, only one is. But there are a lot of really good candidates. From Sergio Garcia to Ann Sattler to Phil Tavel and Brendan Colding to Ari Hoffman. It's time to take back this region. Because if we don't, we're going to lose it. And if you're sick and tired, as I am, of these stories every single day, believe me, I wish I didn't have to do them. Ask yourself what you're doing to change the situation. And when we come back, I'm going to be talking to a guest who wants to change the situation in his city. Russell Weida is running for mayor of Sultan. He's going to stop by in a moment. And you're listening to the Jason Rancher. Producer Tom is back from vacation. I hear it was a wonderful vacation.
I mean, it's just incredible. I can't. You know what? Here's where I'll start.
Oh, well, I'm that's my bad. I missed the time. Russell Weida is on the line. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending on the campaign trail?
There's a strong conservative millennial running for mayor in the city of Sultan. He's a former council member there and a legislative aide to council member Nate Nearing in Snohomish. Joining me on the line ahead of tomorrow's primary is Russell Weida. Russell, thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Jason.
So a lot of people don't think of Sultan necessarily when they're talking about what's going on in Seattle. And the fact of the matter is Sultan is dealing with development, right? A lot of people may be fleeing Seattle because of the cost of living. They look towards Snohomish County, and Sultan can seem pretty appealing. How is this issue playing a role in this race?
Yeah, so this is one of the biggest topics that I hear when I'm out going door to door and talking to people in the community. We're kind of one of the last refuges for affordable housing in the area, and we've got a lot of natural beauty around and kind of that small town feel that people want to raise their families in. So we're facing an influx of growth from not just Seattle, but other parts of Snohomish County that people just can't afford to live anymore, and they're willing to drive that longer commute to buy an affordable home.
So from your perspective, are you anti-development? Are you about smart development? Are you about building as many homes as possible? What's your position?
Yeah, so definitely not anti-development. I think there's a lot of good that comes with new people coming into town and joining our community. I think what we need to do is be smart about how we do that development and making sure that our infrastructure can hold up with it. At the city, we've got our water and sewer utilities. We've got our roads and schools and everything like that that we've got to maintain. The biggest concern I hear with the development is our Highway 2 traffic. And mm-hmm. anyone that's traveled, you know, over the mountains on a Friday and then come back on a Sunday recognizes the issues we have there. So one of the big challenges is working with our state and federal representatives to get some work done on Highway 2. We've had some community meetings out in the valley just even in the last week where we've worked with our county councilman Sam Lowe to start working on a coalition to really bring that to the forefront of the attention of our state and federal representatives. And that's something I'm going to make a priority as mayor. I served on the 522 coalition this last year and made some great progress there. So that's going to be certainly something to focus on.
Yeah, and I was thinking about this as I was prepping for this interview. I mean, you know, there's traffic issues in Sultan before any major development as far as an influx of people. And it does seem like you're in a position, the city's in a position where they can't do that much to build out of the problems because, you know, I suppose people who live in Western Washington, they, you know, want to go to Leavenworth or they basically want to go to the east side of the state. They're likely to take Highway 2. They're not taking I-90 if they want a nice, you know, view on the long drive there.
Yeah, no, and that's exactly it. Our traffic problems are, for the most part, caused by people that don't live in Sultan. They're not necessarily coming to Sultan. They're driving through it. With our new homes being built, those people are going to be on the roads Monday through Friday, morning, afternoon, you know, going to and from work. And right now, our infrastructure holds up pretty well with that. It's that Friday and Sunday commute mm-hmm. of people that are driving through that cause the problem. So it's a difficult thing that we're dealing with. We've got some local solutions. We're looking at some east-west connectors in town to help our residents at least get around town a little bit better when traffic's bad on the highway, but certainly a concern as we move forward.
It sounds like from my following this race that a lot of the concerns of folks in Sultan are similar to the concerns in a Tacoma, Seattle, Everett, where City Hall is just not listing. Have you personally heard that message?
That's definitely something I've heard. Whether I'm just out doorbelling or people reach out to the campaign through social media, they ask about issues and I respond. And almost unanimously what I get is people are surprised to get a response and someone willing to talk to them. And it's really heartening for me that people are excited and willing to interact with their elected officials. And it's something that I've committed to making a priority as mayor. I'm not just telling people that they can come to City Hall if they want their concerns addressed, but really working to go out into the community, their HOA groups, their PTAs, wherever they're already meeting. People have busy lives, and they can't come to a city council meeting on Thursday nights at 7 o'clock. So whatever I can do to reach out to them and make City Hall more accessible, I'm going to do.
Russell, the last time you were on the show, you were running for council. You ended up winning, making you one of the youngest council members in Washington State. How old are you now?
I'm 25 now.
Okay, 25 years old, running for mayor, regardless of the size of the city, is still young. And I'm wondering what your age has played into the campaign, what role it's played.
Yeah, it's certainly a question I got. And as you mentioned, when I was running back in 2015 for council, it was a question I got then too. And what I tell people, I talk about my experience on the city council dealing with the issues. I talk about my work, as you mentioned, at the county council, working with Councilman Nearing, and, you know, a lot of similar issues on a much bigger scale. And my regional connections to elected officials and other folks that really have an impact in Snohomish County and what we do. So I think I prepared myself really well for the role. And have the relationships within Sultan and outside of Sultan to do a good job for our city.
How do people learn more about your campaign?
They can go to Facebook. It's Russell Wita for Sultan Mayor, or my website is russellforsultan.com.
Russellforsultan.com. Wita, by the way, is spelled W-I-I-T-A. Russell, you know we're big fans of yours over here on the show. We wish you the absolute best of luck. If you've got your ballot, send it in already. Do not wait. Russell, thank you so much for stopping by. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thanks so much, Jason.
Of course. You're listening to the Jason Rand Show. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? The sports ball.
So over the weekend, obviously, the entire country was reeling from the mass shootings, and a lot of folks were looking for answers, were acting out on Twitter and Facebook in a way to show their grief. And for one MLS player who's also a member of the U.S. men's national team, Alejandro Bedoya, he decided to use the time that he otherwise would be celebrating a goal to make a statement on gun violence. He ends up scoring a goal. He plays with the Philadelphia Union. And then after his celebration, he runs up to one of the Fox Sports microphones on the field, and he delivers a message.
Down left, and Bedoya shot off the post and in, and the Union take the early lead.
Celebrating. I was going up to a mic.
In the third minute, the captain comes up with a very big goal.
Hey, Congress, do something now. End gun violence. Let's go.
So the question was whether or not he was going to get fined or in any other way punished for his content or for his message. And the answer we can say right now is no. And that's the right move. Generally, you're not supposed to do something like this because they're supposed to stay away from politics. You're certainly not supposed to go and grab a microphone that's on the field. But given the circumstances of what happened over the weekend, there's no one, regardless of your political stripes, who would get upset with that kind of message. Now, I think he's putting the onus on Congress in a way that he's never going to be fully satisfied, because unfortunately on both sides of the aisle, there does not seem to be any sort of agreement on where to move forward. You've got some folks on the right who don't want to see any laws implemented that might restrict access to guns, even if they work. But to be fair to them, you've got folks on the left who aren't looking for solutions. They're looking to go after guns completely. Beyond that, because so many people were so emotional, understandably so, over the weekend, the MLS made the right move in choosing not to go after Alejandro Bedoya, regardless, again, of your political affiliations. That message is certainly understandable after something like what happened during the weekend happened. Meanwhile, and I'm grateful that, you know, I at least get to use this as an entryway into a little bit of sports talk. I know that that's not what I do for a living, but you guys know that I'm incredibly passionate about the Sounders. And yesterday there was a... Okay, this is ridiculous. You do this all the time. I clearly had time. You told me I had time. You said, oh no, you've got time to do Sounders and the Alejandro Bedoya bit. It's exactly what those were your words. And that's exactly what I attempt to do. And the second I talk about the Sounders game, you play the traffic pretending that we're so late.
Well, just like I didn't have time to talk about my vacation, you don't have time to talk about the Sounders.
I would have thought that your vacation might have humbled you a bit into realizing who's in charge here.
Are you in charge? But, go ahead and talk about the Sounders.
Okay, well, yesterday they played sport. God, I hate you. I hate you so much.
Bellingham, Bellevue, Shoreline, Tacoma.
This is the Big Local on the Jason Ranch Show.
Olympia, Everett, Mercer Island.
Stories about you, not about Seattle.
It's the Jason Ranch Show, 4:30 on a weekday afternoon. Means it's time for the Big Local, brought to you by Sean Keller, Smiles by Design. The concept of the Big Local is pretty simple. The media is hyper-focused on the city of Seattle. They end up ignoring a lot of the stories that are impacting you and the neighborhoods you live in and care about most. So we do the opposite. We focus on you and your communities, and we completely ignore the city of Seattle. Although, in some circumstances, it's kind of hard to completely ignore what Seattle is doing, as is the case in the city of Olympia. Because they've dealt with the homelessness situation a lot in the last couple of years, especially. And they decided at some point to not take it as seriously as they should. They did not crack down on the illegal encampments, and it started to spread. And they managed to screw up the entire circumstance the same way the city that we don't talk about during this segment screwed up the situation. And now they're trying to stop the unauthorized camps that are popping up all over Olympia, because for too long, unfortunately, quote-unquote leaders in Olympia did absolutely nothing meaningful to go after them. So now they've created something called the Rapid Response System. The Rapid Response Team, excuse me. And part of what they do is they target these encampments for cleanups. They go around, they say, oh, there's a area here that needs to be cleaned up. We need to jump on it quickly. Mark Moore is the lead of the clean team, and he spoke with the Olympian, saying that they're targeting specific encampments.
So basically, Rapid Response, we're running 5 days a week, Monday through Friday from 7 a.m. to 3:30. Basically,
that was a good hour.
We're put together to monitor different sites and take care of any loose debris and garbage that we see along the way. So we have different routes we have structured, different hotspots. And pretty much anybody can call if they see anything that doesn't look like it belongs. You know, feel free to give us a call. You know, we'll come out and assess if we can take care of it, or we can point you in the right direction and take care of it. So
now, pointing someone in the right direction sometimes means going through a different department. But for them, they say they're going to be monitoring the growth and the spread of these encampments.
The goal is pretty much to stay on top of the sites, making sure no new sites pop up. So, I mean, we always want to make sure that we're on top of it, because if something starts to take off, then we have to be there to assess that as well. So keeping it clean and staying on top of it is the main goal.
So in other words, keep it clean, because if you don't, it becomes a bigger and bigger and bigger and more of a nuisance kind of problem. Now, the Olympian says the team's only going to work on city property or rights of way. And if it's called to private property, as he just explained, they'll point you in the right direction, like code enforcement officers. If there are people actively camping out, they say they're going to call the police. And that's what this is. It needs to be about. If there's not police enforcement here, all you're doing is just picking up after the homeless people. Now, if that's what you want to do, you're fine to do it. It's a bad move, because it doesn't actually help people. You're just enabling people to stay out on the streets. We should be doing whatever we can to get people off of the streets and into some kind of shelter for the short term, a program if they need to in the short term, whether we're talking about mental health treatment, addiction treatment, job training programs, and then long term we get them into a position where they can self-sustain. But unless you get the police involved, unless you get the police to move people who are camped out, you're literally doing nothing. They say they're going to call the cops. Let's see. Because a lot of cops all across Western Washington are saying that they are having their hands tied by city leaders who will not let them do their job. Now, there are clearly areas that are doing this right when it relates to the police interacting with homeless people. All you have to do is look in Snohomish County. All you have to do is look in the city of Arlington or Marysville, where they embed a social worker with police officers who say, hey, I know you want to sleep here. You can't. It's against the law. I'm going to arrest you unless you take us up on our help. Here is our offer of help. Here is the social worker outlining it for you. Agree to let them help you, or we're throwing you in jail or moving you along. We're not going to let you just sleep here, and we're certainly not going to just pick up after you, after the mess that you're making. It's working there. It can work in Olympia. Let's see if they have the political willpower to actually do it. Speaking of cops, let's talk about what the Snohomish County Sheriff's Office is doing. They are using virtual reality for training purposes.
100%. There's no doubt in my mind that law enforcement, the public, is going to benefit from this.
What we're using it for is to build certain environments and to create certain problems using things that we could never do in traditional training.
So what I love about this training, using virtual reality, well, number one, it's a lot less expensive to go ahead and do this because you can literally just put them in a room, in a small studio, put the headsets on and whatnot, and go ahead and do this rather than set up this big routine of the training. We kind of see it sometimes in movies where you get the up-and-coming new cop who gets put in the train, and then they put him on like a stage and you're walking around and then little things pop up with bad guys. You're supposed to shoot them. But then, of course, the new up-and-coming rookie, he accidentally kills the little girl with the doll. And they say, oh, you just killed good son, good thing. It was just a cardboard cutout. That's what they do in all the movies.
You should have pulled a cut from Men in Black. I'm just now realizing that.
Okay, well then a good producer would have figured that out.
Yeah, whatever.
Probably not after I already did the bit. They say this type of training would normally take weeks of planning, multiple locations, and dozens of people. So this is another good way of how we're using technology to better equip our officers, our sheriff's deputies. I love this. I wish this was done more. I do, however, wonder if we rely too much on this, does it take out the sort of instincts that you would develop if you're actually in a real world scenario, even if it is controlled on some sort of, you know, safe set of some kind? You kind of get a feeling that you don't necessarily, you can't feel, for example, a bad guy in your virtual reality set, like walking up behind you. You're not going to be able to sense that. But if you're in a scenario where a literal human being is behind you, I feel like that develops sort of the, you know, the spidey, you know, sense of what you need to when you're a cop. So I like this. I just hope we don't go too far into relying on the technology in this regard.
I hope we don't tell them, find a way that this is VR, you know, like kind of sneak the mask on them, make them think it's real life. And so they treat it as such. Because if they know they're wearing VR, they're probably going to be a little more loose. Like,
how do you explain, like, the physical goggles on their head?
Okay, here's my idea. Chloroform. They wake up.
Mm-hmm.
They have the VR set on.
I have another, like, I'm with you on the creativity, I suppose. It's a little outside the box thinking, which, you know, we're supposed to, you know, ensure it feels, like, developed and coddled. But
yeah,
I feel like you'd run into a consent problem.
I don't know. They tase them. I mean,
with consent.
With, yeah. No,
they don't consent. Just walk up to a cop and tase them so they understand what it feels like. You do prepare them. For, like, you say, we're going to tase you.
Is it kind of forced consent? Like, do they really want to be like, yeah,
no,
you know what? I'll do this.
No, it's not. Finally, hide your sons. A cougar was spotted prowling through a neighborhood on the south end of Mercer Island. Mercer Island city officials advised anyone who has a close encounter with a cougar to stop, pick up small children immediately, and don't run. Pick up small... Okay. If you've got like an 18-year-old, 19-year-old freshman, sophomore in college, okay, maybe warn them. I don't think the cougars are going after like the 8-year-old. They're not... It's just like relax. They say running and rapid movements may trigger an attack and the cougar might drop some of their boxed wine.
Are we talking about the same story here?
Yeah, they said they spotted a cougar on Mercer Island.
Right.
Story number 3 in the Big Local.
3. Yeah, okay. Yeah, that one is about...
That
one's about an animal cougar, not what you're talking about.
Cougar, Mercer Island, boxed wine. I mean, it says boxed wine.
Does it say boxed wine?
I mean, that might have been a note of my... Hold on. Cougar attacks on humans or... Oh, okay. Yeah, okay, you're right.
Yeah.
Okay. Although I will say this, they give some recommended like procedures in dealing with a cougar, which are actually kind of confusing. If I just went to...
Before you start about the animal cougar,
no,
right?
No, no, yeah, but I'm just saying it says like face the cougar. Talk to it firmly while slowly backing away. I've been in scenarios where I've had to do that. usually on the Greater East Side before one of the speaking events, a cougar will spot me, and I got to stare them down as they're hanging on to what I'm assuming was their fourth glass of wine.
Yeah,
and
again,
I say, no, I know. I'm just saying it's easy to confuse the two because I'm all like, not interested. No. And you back away slowly because if you make too quick of movement, they run up to you and they start to hug you and it gets uncomfortable.
Again, I know. I just don't want to confuse the residents of Mercer Island who are listening right now.
No, I know. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying it can. So here's another one. Try to appear larger to the cougar. But I found in my experience, again, generally in the Greater East Side, mostly downtown Bellevue, that if you do that, they kind of like it. They're all like, you're going to protect me.
Well, yes, you're right. But again, we're talking about like the animal with teeth and claws here.
No, I know. They say if wearing a jacket, hold it open to further increase your apparent size. I've done that before, but then they think you're just being romantic and want to put a jacket around them because it's cold outside.
Well, that may be true for, you know, older women who are interested in younger men. That's not the same for the animal.
No, I know.
I think we should emphasize that.
They say, do not take your eyes off the cougar or turn your back. I found that also sends the message that you're interested. Because, he's not taking his eyes off me, that Jason Rance.
Oh, boy.
Says it all the time. Yikes. This one I agree with. Never approach the cougar, especially if it's near a kill.
Oh, no. No.
That's what we call it when we throw a friend who's with you towards the cougar.
I think that's called being a wingman, actually.
Not the way that we forcefully push the person into a situation that they don't want to be in.
Oh, this took a turn.
It's not my fault.
This is
from Cairo 7.
No,
I didn't
do it.
It
is your fault. It's your fault.
Or King 5. I don't remember who pulled this. 1-800-465-877 if you want to send me a text on the Numb Better Tax Resolution Hotline. 1-800-465-8770. Really do appreciate your text messages, including what I think was a photo of either a cougar or a deer. I can't really tell. 1-800-465-8770. Welcome back to the Jason Rand Show, live in the Online Trading Academy studio. Really do appreciate you tuning in. Jay Inslee spent the last 5 months as governor of Washington State while not actually being governor of Washington State. He's been off running his campaign for president, and given they've made literally no impact whatsoever in the national race, I believe not ever polling past 1%, you do have to wonder what in the world he's been doing for the last 5 months. So we already know he hasn't spent his time here. In fact, according to the Seattle Times, he spent more than half of his days traveling out of state for his presidential campaign. What has he been doing on the road to not get past a percentage point? I don't quite understand. I know he did some dorky, dopey videos on Twitter, riding a bicycle and then riding a electric moped or whatever the hell he was on, the scooters. But beyond that, it seems like he's been out of work here in Washington State with little to show for it. Oh, except we're paying him his normal salary. He's not actually working as our governor, but he's collecting the $182,000 a year that is his salary as governor of Washington State. He should, of course, use that to pay back the state of Washington for covering his security costs. He won't, of course. He's happy to take a handout from Washington State voters, taxpayers. I love the argument coming from progressives like Jay Inslee. CEOs are not worth as much as they get paid, despite the fact that they run and operate, in some cases, multi-billion dollar companies. They're not deserving of their high pay. They do the work. They're responsible. They show up every single day. They work 12-hour days. They're not worth it. And yet Jay Inslee is worth his $182,000 a year salary, despite in the last 5 months spending over half of it outside of the state. Now, to be fair, you can be out of state and still be the governor. I certainly admit there's a lot of stuff you can do on the road. But let's not pretend that that's what Jay Inslee is doing. When you're running a presidential campaign, you're running a presidential campaign. You've got other people who are doing some work for you, and maybe you'll give it a pass to, oh, no, I've been working. I've been approving all of this. You haven't been doing any of the work. You have not been attending the meetings. You've not been doing what you normally would do if you were actually here in Washington State, if you were actually in Olympia. You're just not doing that. So you're a governor right now in name only. And yet he won't pay us back for the money he's taking from taxpayers. Here's the deal. He realistically, Jay Inslee, he's got about a week left of his campaign. Right now, he has to fight really, really hard to earn the support to make it into round three of the debates. And it's much more difficult this time around. Because not only does he have to have 130,000 individual donations from individual people, he has to get at least 2% across four approved polls. He's nowhere near that. He can probably get to 130,000 voters giving him money. I'm assuming he can get to that. It's kind of hard when you're running a national race not to get to that. But there's no way he's going to get to 2% across four polls. He hasn't been able to get to 1.00001% across one poll. And so he's going to hope in the course of the next week or so that the polls start ticking upwards, giving him some momentum, even if it's small, giving him some hope that he can get to 2%. He's got until the 28th to do that. He's going to realize very quickly that he's not going to be able to get to that point. I know he's trying to make some news in the El Paso and Dayton shootings, saying, yeah, white nationalism is responsible. We got to stop it by getting the white nationalists out of the White House. Yeah, we got it. That didn't really track well. He tweeted it. It's not going to pick up anywhere. And certainly they're not going to go to you for a story that's happening in Texas and in Ohio. They're going to representatives who actually represent those areas. They'll go to Beto O'Rourke, who used to represent El Paso, before they're going to go to Jay Inslee, the Washington State governor, who doesn't actually spend any time in Washington State. So my guess is, by the end of this week, they will start putting out some sort of foreshadowing that they're about to pull out, and maybe they'll put it out there in a way to get people to show their support, like a desperate plea for some help. But they've already decided there's no way that this is a viable candidacy. And he knew it from the start. He did it anyway. I don't know why. Was it to raise his profile a bit? Is it so that he can make some money off of this run when he inevitably comes out with another book that no one will buy? Is it so that he can become a member of the next administration if it's a Democrat? Right now, it doesn't look like it's going to be. We'll see. 1-800-465-877. Maybe given the fact that he spent so much time outside of Washington, maybe it's just an indication he just doesn't like it here. He's just not happy with Washington State.
Well, I mean, you got a lot of pollution, so.
Yeah, isn't it weird that the guy who's all into cutting carbon emissions saw carbon emissions here rise at an unprecedented level? It's the Jason Rand Show, one more hour coming up.